Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Get updates and show information at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Your host is former Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard, retired Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. Whether you're listening on one of our local Minnesota stations across the country on our national broadcast or on your favorite podcast platform, we're glad that you're with us today. This week, we're going to meet Jana Nornberg. She's the new Associate Director for Patient Care Services and a nurse executive out of the Minneapolis VA, bringing more than 28 years of service in the U.S. Army Nurse Corps, along with experience in nursing education. We're going to talk about her military career and her transition to the VA. And then later on, we're going to be joined by Melanie Nelson, the public affairs officer for the Minneapolis VA health care system, to discuss Veterans Health Administration's the 80th anniversary. And there's a little bit of contention there, and we're going to get to the bottom of that as well. We'll hear about how veterans and families can connect with the outreach team later this summer as well. But kicking things off today to talk about the VA secretary visit, Doug Collins' visit to Mankato, including a stop at the Lyle C. Pearson Community-Based Outpatient Clinic, is the director of the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, Pat Kelly. And director, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hello, Doug. It's nice to be back with you, as always.
Well, it's good to have you here, and I had a mouthful throwing a bunch of stuff out there about how we're going to frame up the show, and it's good to have you calling in today to talk to us a little bit about this recent visit. It's always good to hear about, you know, when our leaders from across the state at our federal government or whatever it is comes to visit some of our entities and, you know, specifically in this case, you know, coming down to Mankato and visiting a CBOC, as we call it. Maybe we can start there and talk a little bit about that visit. And were you there and what was your takeaway?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So this was Secretary Collins' third visit to the state of Minnesota since he's been the secretary. He came at the invitation of Congressman Finstead from the 1st Congressional District. We took some time while he was at the clinic to review some local healthcare issues, along with some issues where maybe he could help us. And so one of the themes with the secretary whenever he travels, and I really admire this, his main thing is to ask and to take back any areas where we think his considerable horsepower can support us in getting things done. So, you know, lots of bureaucracy in the federal government, lots of chain of command, lots of processes. He wants to hear directly from staff, from veterans, from me, from others. How can he make things better for veterans? That's his theme, and it's good. I mean, it's well received by the clinic staff. And we had some very frank dialogues about areas for improvement.
Well, I think that's the key thing there, right? Especially when, in a lot of cases, I'm not saying in this case, but, you know, when you meet with senior leaders in the organization, often you hear the things that they want you to hear, mm-hmm. maybe not the things you mm-hmm. need to hear. And you had mentioned about, you know, being able to reach out and talk to the veterans, too. And so a part of this visit, there was a roundtable. Is that right?
Yeah, so in the afternoon, he took the time, it was about an hour and a half, where he heard from Minnesota veteran leaders, county veteran service officers, veteran service organization commanders, and others who are sort of representative or engaged deeply in the advocacy for veterans. And again, it was a similar message. It was, you know, I'm here. I don't want to hear general complaints about the VA. I want to hear specifically how I can help you and we can together make things better. He promised to take them back. And I can tell you, he did take a couple things back. And since he did, he and his staff have engaged with us on how we can better support veterans. Generally, a very positive visit. We get great support from our veteran service organizations and county veteran service officers. But, you know, as he said, there's always areas where we can do better. Tell me what those areas are, and let's get at it.
I'm wondering if you might be willing to share one or two of those things that really came to the top that the secretary's addressing already.
Yeah, so I'll talk about maybe two things, Doug. You know, first of all, There's an issue related to how veterans in state veterans' homes access services in the VA. And so it's a bit of a complicated issue, but there, you know, state veterans' homes receive a per diem from the VA. Part of this per diem includes that they provide some services to include, you know, dental services and some other services. And so they either provide those services or we enter into an agreement, sharing agreement, so they come to the VA. So the veteran doesn't lose the service, but the service is really organized and provided through the state. And so there was some confusion, or there's been some confusion of late about how that's supposed to work and how we can make it easier for the veterans. And again, that's great. He said, it is on my radar. So he took it back, you know, and so we've been working it through the staff. We want this too. This gives us an opportunity to make things better and clearer for not only Minnesota veterans, but nationwide. We think it's important for the VA to have a standard that sort of benefit and process. And so he took that back. We are working that. We've already made good progress. He's pushing it forward. And of course, he has the ability to do so. Another issue we talked about is sort of the issue of ease of use for community care. So he is not pushing more community care. We are all pushing veterans' choice, and most veterans want to get their care through the VA. But when that's not possible, you know, he likes to hear from service organizations and veteran leaders, you know, what are some of the issues? How can he make it better and easier for veterans once they're authorized to get community care? How can we facilitate that so that it's not so difficult? And, you know, it can be difficult. I get community care. And when I do, I have questions. And who answers my questions? And so, again, he heard that loud and clear. There's a new contract. He's going to see how he can incorporate that into the new contract. But those are just a couple of examples. He heard that. He's doing something about it. And I think it's going to be better for veterans.
I'd like to know from your perspective really the importance of the community-based outreach, the clinics itself, right? I mean, obviously we know not everybody can come to Minneapolis where there's fantastic care, but when you just look at the scope of the mission of the VA and how the CBOCs really support that, I'm just wondering if you can just talk to that quickly and the importance there.
Yeah, so a couple things, Doug. First, I will mention that all of our community-based clinics provide core services, primary care, mental health care, physical therapy. Some of them provide some more specialized care, like audiology exams or eye exams. And all of them provide a lot of telehealth, where we connect veterans from, whether it's in Hibbing or Ely, we connect them to the Minneapolis VA so the veterans don't have to travel. So that's an important benefit. One of the things we have done, and we talked to the secretary about this over the last 3 years, is that we have moved a lot of specialty services from Minneapolis out into the community-based clinics in order that veterans can get those specialty medicine, surgical services, and other services that they would have previously traveled to Minneapolis to get. They can get it closer to where they live. And so we still provide those services in Minneapolis, but we will also take it on the road so that the veterans, so that we're traveling and the veteran doesn't have to travel. So That really has been sort of the biggest, I would say, initiative, breakthrough, improvement that we have done over the last several years with our community-based clinics.
And I think that veterans' choice is such a great option, a better way to serve our veterans. So we're going to run out of time here, Director, and I got two things that I want to bring up real quick. The first one is I really look forward to visiting with you at the ribbon-cutting ceremony for the Women's Clinic, and then we'll be recording that show, and we'll be playing it out a little bit later on in the summer, so looking forward to seeing you in person to do that. And then I'm wondering if, as we get ready to go to break, you can talk a little bit about, you know, this new person that you're going to introduce that's going to kick off the second segment and, you know, really how this nurse executive role is and who it is and what you've got to say about Jana.
That's great. Thank you. Yeah, and we are unbelievably lucky to have Jana on our staff. So the nurse executive is one of her two roles in addition to overseeing patient care services. But, you know, we have the equivalent of about 1,400 nurses at the Minneapolis VA. We are a huge employer of nurses. Part of Jana's job is to oversee nursing practice. That is a very big job. And so to oversee that practice, that's a key role. Jana brings more than 28 years of distinguished service in the U.S. Army, a Nurse Corps. She's had significant leadership jobs. You know, she's been overseas. She has served in a variety of positions. I actually first met her or became familiar with her when she was a Navy, Army captain, and I had a fleet hospital in Spain, and she was bringing Army veterans from Kuwait over to our site in Spain to receive services. So she has a long history of distinguished service. After she served in the military, and by the way, she retired as a colonel, 06, following her military career, she continued her commitment as a faculty member at Bethel University, where part of that was she was bringing nurses over to the VA. She then began working for us in 2025, at that time as the deputy nurse executive, the number two nurse, and then accepted her current position in January of this past year. I really believe it's important to have veterans, senior veterans, on our executive team. Lucky to have a retired Army colonel on our executive team. Jan is terrific. She's going to improve our services to veterans, and we are really lucky to have her.
Well, thank you, Director. We're going to spend the next two segments speaking to her, getting to know about her career and her impressions of the Minneapolis VA thus far. So we look forward to that conversation. And, Director, as always, we appreciate you calling in and spending some time with us here on Minnesota Military Radio.
Okay, thanks, Doug.
You bet. That's the Director of the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. We're joined now by Jana Nornberg. She's the new Associate Director for Patient Care Services and Nurse Executive at the Minneapolis VA. Jana's path to this role began in nursing and continued through a long career in the Army Nurse Corps. We're going to start with that story, what drew her to nursing, how military service shaped her leadership, and why she chose to continue serving veterans through VA healthcare. Jana, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Doug.
Okay, well, you had a nice introduction by the director. Obviously, a lot of respect for you and what you bring to the table. And what a small world, having met him in Spain when you were doing what you were supposed to be doing for the Army.
Yeah, Rota, Spain, bringing a veteran. I think it was a Marine, actually, that I took to Rota, Spain in 2003.
Wow. And then here you are now working on his executive team out at the Minneapolis VA healthcare system. What a great road. So let's kind of start there a little bit. I think, you know, when we do interviews with people, it's always great to talk about their military service. And what I thought I would do for you is just talk a little bit about nursing in general. Like why? What led you to nursing? And then we'll get into the military career.
Yeah, great question. I don't know that I had a direct path into nursing. I kind of stumbled into it. Grew up on a farm in northeastern Montana. The only jobs that were available to teenagers at the time were to help in the general store or to become a certified nursing assistant. And so I chose the certified nursing assistant path. It paid a little bit better.
Not that there's anything wrong with the general store, but
absolutely not. But I did cap out the pay scale at the age of 17.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Because I sought all the certifications, always been a little bit driven to do more. But that's how I ended up in nursing.
Okay. And so obviously it was a passion. But eventually you end up deciding to raise your right hand and take this oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States and serve in our United States Army. So how does that even come about?
So that came about because I was, again, grew up on a farm in northeastern Montana, had what we needed but didn't have a lot of extra, so looking for a way to pay for college.
Ooh, yeah.
And so stumbled into a little bit the Army ROTC scholarship program. There's a long and kind of funny story about how I ended up there. I actually joined the Army without knowing I was joining the Army.
Oh, God, I got to hear this story.
So seeking the money for college, filled out the application. They sent back another packet saying, congratulations, you've made it through the first wicket. Now you need to go to the University of Montana, take a physical fitness test, have an interview. And I was like, that's a lot for a scholarship, but keep your eye on the prize.
Yeah.
The fitness part didn't bother me. I played sports in high school, so was ready for that. The interview, it didn't occur to me that the person who was conducting the interview was wearing a military uniform. Like that connection just didn't happen.
Sure.
So finished that part, went back home. Got another letter in the mail. Congratulations, you're one step closer. Now you have to go to Minot Air Force Base and have a physical exam. And I thought, gosh, that's a lot for a
scholarship.
Keep
your eye on the prize.
Keep your eye on the prize. Did that, came back, was awarded a four-year full scholarship, Army ROTC scholarship, to the school of my choice. And I chose the University of Minnesota. Never been to Minneapolis.
Wow. But just reputation, is that what drove you here? Or why, just to get away from Montana? What was the Minneapolis or Minnesota draw?
I've had family that live, that are in Minnesota. But I think I had this, I enjoyed watching shows that were based in Minneapolis. And I thought, now
Mary
I need
Tyler
to look
Moore?
At Mary Tyler Moore is the one. So I thought, well, let's go to Minneapolis.
Yeah. And wow. And so I need to know this, right? So you go to Minot, you take this physical. At some point in time, though, you had to raise your hand, right, and say, yes, I swear?
Not until I got to campus, September-ish of 1991, and was filling out all the paperwork. Had to do the swearing in, and she said, well, what day were you born? So I told her my birth date, and she said, make sure that you write down one day prior to that when you sign all the forms, or one day after that when you sign all the forms, because I was still 17.
Oh, okay.
So I did have to swear in. Again, eye on the prize. It's money for college. Then she said, you need to go see Gene down in the basement. He's going to give you all your uniforms. I'm like, uniforms for what? Uh-huh. This is Army ROTC. I'm like, it's money for college. She goes, well, you have to serve to get the money for college.
Okay. And so you get the four-year full ride, which is great, school of choice. When did you then understand there was an actual service obligation after graduation?
About a month in.
Okay.
It all sort of became crystal clear as we're going through PT, physical training, Monday, Wednesday, Friday mornings. Thursday was leadership lab. And all of a sudden it started to sort of come together that I had done this monumental thing. And I wasn't sure I had done the right monumental thing. And I called home every night. Mom, I just want to go home. I don't know what I did. And she's like, well, you have to finish the semester.
Yeah, right.
Like, we moved you out there. You have to finish the semester. When you finish the semester, then we can talk. Well, by the time we got to the end of the semester, I had my first field training exercise, and I loved it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And was it a local, or where'd you go for the field
training? Ripley.
Camp Ripley. Oh, yeah, my old stomping grounds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
And you loved it?
I did. I found that sense of community that I was missing at the university.
Okay.
So my high school senior class had 8 students in it. My intro to psych class had 800 students.
Okay. Yeah.
And so found like the sense of community in my ROTC group.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You know, you kept your eye on the prize, and they probably explained this at some point in time throughout the process, but you were just like so enamored with getting this scholarship that you just kept on going, which is just awesome. So let's talk a little bit about your military career. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you graduated, you got the degree, you had to go and serve, and it turned into a nice career. As the director said, you retired as a full bird in 06. That in itself isn't an easy feat. Not many people get the opportunity to retire at that rank, 28 years. So let's talk about your service and maybe think about those assignments and the things that you learned that really are things you are capitalizing now in your civilian career.
Yeah, so I started out as a critical care nurse. My first assignment was in San Antonio at the big major medical center down there. Got exposed to the wide range of what Army nursing means. I thought I would serve 4 years. Then they sent me to Korea. Had a great time in Korea. And then they sent me to Walter Reed, had a great time at Walter Reed. And the next thing you know, it's 28 years that have passed. But I did all the traditional sort of nursing leadership development type roles. So from staff nurse to charge nurse to nurse manager, all the way up to being the chief nursing officer at Landstuhl Regional Medical Center in Germany.
So you're definitely bringing just a wealth of knowledge and experience to the Minneapolis VA. Which at that time, of course, you didn't know this is where you're going to end up because you've got this great military career going.
Yeah.
Now, when you met the director, obviously he wasn't the director. Did you guys stay in contact at all, or was there like this magic surprise or big, like, oh my God, I know you. I recognize you from somewhere.
No, I wouldn't say we kept in touch. It was really more of we did the typical record break crosswalk. Well, where were you then? And where were you?
Oh, yeah.
And then Oh, yeah, Rota, Spain.
Oh, yeah. You know, I went to Rota, Spain. I once brought, and then he's like, I remember this. And next mm-hmm. thing you know, you guys have this great conversation. And
yep.
Now, is this all after you'd been hired? Or do you think that was the thing that really pushed
you? No, it was after.
Okay, so let's talk about another interesting story you have about the VA. Because, again, military service, you're retiring, you need to find a place to go, or you want to find a place to go. We're fortunate that you came back to Minnesota. But this isn't the first time you worked for the VA. Tell us that story.
Well, it actually is the first time I've worked for the VA. And when I was in graduate school in 2004 through 2005 or six, I was in San Antonio, and the faculty were setting up our clinical rotations and said, we need you to go to the Audie Murphy VA Medical Center to do two of these rotations. With great hesitation, I was like, I don't want to go to the VA. I've heard things that didn't make me terribly enamored with the idea of furthering my education within that footprint. But I went to the San Antonio VA. Amazing experience. It was very nurse-led, evidence-based, practice-forward. They were doing just really innovative and great work. And then in partnership with the local university and with the military treatment facilities there in San Antonio, it totally changed my perspective on VA healthcare.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, we'll talk about your transition to VA healthcare in a minute, right after this break. And, well, you know, great story so far. We're glad that you're here. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. In this segment, we continue the conversation with Jana Nornberg from the Minneapolis VA healthcare system. And Jana, obviously, we talked about in the last segment, you know, your military career, you know, why you got started or how you got started in nursing. Maybe you got tricked, maybe you didn't, into joining the military, but it turned out to be a great career. You had a brief experience with the VA when you're in San Antonio. Hesitantly, you went. You loved it. Now, as you transition away from active duty, were you seeking right away an opportunity to come to the VA?
No, Doug. When I made the decision to retire, I had zero plans of rejoining the federal government. I was on a pathway to become a faculty member at a local university. Actually, been hired at another university, but chose Minnesota because that's where my husband's family is from. Funny story there. We were at 28 years. My husband's an Air Force veteran in his own right.
Okay.
And separated from service right before 9/11. So he followed me around for many years. And so one night we were at this restaurant called the Dead Fish Grill in Belton, Texas.
Okay.
And having dinner. And I said, you know, when it's time to retire, you get to pick. Like, you pick the location. Because I made him go all kinds of places that he probably didn't want to go to. And he's sitting there, this beautiful, looking out over the lake. And he says, I think I could retire here. And I said, I revoke your right to choose, because I didn't want to be in Texas. But when we got to really making that decision, he's like, I want to go home.
Yeah.
And home being Minnesota. So that's how we landed in Minnesota. But I had no plans of rejoining the federal workforce.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of people say that. I said that when I retired as well. I didn't want to join, you know, back into some type of government work. But is it the mission? Is it the camaraderie? I mean, what draws you to it, to actually consider it?
So while I was teaching, I was bringing students as part of my clinical duties was to take nursing students on their clinical rotation, and I was assigned to the Minneapolis VA. And every Tuesday or Thursday, depending on the semester, I'd be in the Minneapolis VA thinking, I have to find a way to be here, to be back with my people.
Yeah.
So serving the nursing staff as leader and then serving the veteran population.
Wow.
And
that's awesome.
Fortunately, was able to stumble my way into that deputy nurse executive role last summer.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's unheard of, but a lot of times in an organization, you kind of come up through the ranks. And so for an outsider to come in, obviously you've got the resume, you know, to support what, you know, you're doing now. But so let's talk about that, because you got this huge title. You're an associate director for patient care services. You're the nurse executive. Can you kind of like dumb it down for me so I understand really what that means?
Yeah. And Mr. Kelly kind of alluded to, you know, as the nurse executive, I've governed nursing practice. So I make sure that policies are appropriate, that we're resourced appropriately. The nurses don't actually work for me. They work for their service lines. So I just have that oversight responsibility for the nursing practice. But in my other role as the Associate Director for Patient Care Services, I provide executive oversight for pharmacy service, for our care in the community team, for the sterile processing department, for the chaplains. And then we have a small-ish office of nursing support personnel, nursing services support people. They work for me.
Now, do you have actual hands-on, or are you really just administrative now, making sure things are running smoothly?
I really am just administrative. However, I still like being a nurse.
Yeah.
And so I worked a couple of shifts during a weekend in which we had a really large number of what we call border patients. So our inpatient beds were all full. We had to open an additional unit, but we don't get more staff to do that. So I put on the scrubs.
Yeah.
Worked two night shifts over MLK weekend.
You know, what's great about that is, as a leader, the people that, even though they don't report to you, they see you doing this. And that provides some motivation to them, too, that, you know, you're willing to, quote unquote, get your hands dirty and fill in when the need is there.
Yep. It was great. It was a great weekend.
Yeah.
I was exhausted by the end. I don't do night shifts anymore. But it was really, it was nice to interact with the staff in their own space, hear what their challenges were, see what some of their challenges and barriers were.
Sure. Because you need to be able to address some of those and help them through this process and make changes where allowed to make things better. So let's talk about the nurses in general, right? Most people, if they come to visit the VA for whatever the reason is, right, for some type of a checkup or whatever, they're going to have an interaction with a nurse. So talk to us a little bit about the importance of that nurse's interaction with our veterans as they come in to have a service or get cared for.
Yeah, our nursing team does phenomenal work day over day, whether they're out in the home-based primary care environment, downtown Minneapolis at the Community Resource and Referral Center, in our medical center, in our clinics. They're everywhere, and veterans do interact with them in a variety of different ways. They provide counseling services. They provide medication administration, all the typical nurse sorts of things. But in VA, that really gets stretched out further because they're out in the community meeting veterans where they are. We had an event just this week where a veteran called the crisis line, was planning to sleep in his car with his child on our campus. And they rallied around, got him plugged into the resources that he needed, into a shelter in St. Paul, and then made some on-the-fly decisions to house him temporarily in our medical center while they were waiting for those resources to come together. And I think if that had happened in the community, that veteran would have been sent off on his own to go figure it out. Instead, the nursing team, the social work team, VA police rallied around this veteran who was in crisis and made sure he was safe.
Well, obviously, you know, as you're talking and describing that, you know, I can see the emotion in your face and hear it in your voice. And I think that's one of the great things about giving some of that latitude to our staff to take that extra step, go the extra mile, because at the end of the day, the job, the goal, the need is to serve our veterans where they're at. And get them the resources that they're entitled to, and whatever those resources might be, trying to figure a way to get them the help that they need as well.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. We're going to run out of time here, but I want to make sure I highlight, you know, the fact that you do have training background, nurse training experience. How do you take that and then help shape and form, you know, the nurses you now care for at the VA?
Yeah, that those 2 years I spent teaching at Bethel really gave me a different perspective on how we grow our nursing profession, because it's very different than it was when I went to nursing school. So be able to bring some of that back into practice. We talk a lot about the practice partner when we were in education. So this academic practice kind of collateral partnership, that's how we grow staff best, is if we can make those connections strong. And so I'm fortunate to be on the practice side now and not on the education side, but still keeping those ties back with the university, because I think as we grow the next generation of nurses, that is who is going to take care of me when I need care.
Right.
And if I grow them well, they will replace me when I'm ready to retire. So education, that's just a powerful way to improve care. And if we do that well, then the profession will stay strong.
So we only have about a minute and a half here remaining together. And so I'm just wondering, you know, you've been here for a long time, but a short time, you know, with the Minneapolis VA. And I'm just wondering, you know, kind of what your initial impressions are and maybe where some of the things are, the areas that you're like, okay, these are some great opportunities to support where I want us to be by the time you retire again.
I have a vision for things that must be accomplished before I'm allowing myself to retire again. But the Minneapolis VA, the staff are amazing. They are all centered on making sure the veteran gets what the veteran needs when the veteran needs it in the best and most efficient and safest way possible. The things that surprised me, I had no idea that we had nurses all over the footprint of Minnesota and Western Wisconsin. So to include in the veteran's home. So that surprised me when I came in, and just the breadth of what we do. Polytrauma, I knew that we had that. I didn't know what that meant.
Right.
Now I have a greater understanding of what that means. And the community living centers, that I didn't know anything about. So learning more and more about the system every day that I'm there, and then finding opportunities to improve the care that we get to provide every day.
Right. Well, if I know the director – and with what you bring to the table, that list might get longer and longer just to keep you around a little bit longer as well. So I look forward to visiting with you again in the future. We're get some updates on, you know, what you're doing, the great things you're doing to take care of our nursing staff that in turn takes care of our veterans. And we appreciate that. So, Jenna, thanks so much for spending time with us here on Minnesota Military Radio. Great to meet you, and I look forward to seeing you again in the future.
Yeah, thank you, Doug.
You bet. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. In our final segment today, we're joined by Melanie Nelson, the Public Affairs Officer for the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. This year, the Veterans Health Administration is recognizing 80 years of caring for veterans, and the Minneapolis VA has its own long history of service. We're going to get clarification about that. We're going to talk about those milestones, and then we'll hear about what it means for veterans and families today. And, of course, we want to talk about outreach. And so with that, Melanie, it's always great to see you. Thank you for being here. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Your smiling face, a great guest in Jana, the last two segments. What a great find for the Minneapolis VA.
Right. Yep. And another Army colleague. I can't complain about that.
Yeah, I think we made comment of that when we saw each other just before the show, when you introduced me to her as a 28-year Army veteran. I said, I like you already. So that was fun. Well, let's talk about really why you're here today, you know, to talk about some milestones. And, you know, there's been, of course, a ton of talk going on about the 250th anniversary of our nation's independence. I mean, that's a great milestone to celebrate, unless you're from a country in Europe where you say, well, you're just still a baby. But in its own right, the VA has some pretty significant milestones to talk about, too. So let's start with 80 years. Give us some clarification about 80 years.
Oh, well, thank you, Doug. If you walk into the VA, the Minneapolis VA, you'll see banners up, of course, celebrating 250, and also celebrating VHA 80, Veterans Health Administration 80. And this is a tricky topic because we've been along a lot longer than that, haven't we?
Yeah.
And so,
well, not you and me, but
no, not
the,
you,
the VA itself, right? The Minneapolis.
Yes, yes. And so, oofta, it was really hard to explain to some folks. And so I appreciate being able to communicate what that means. And so the VA, you know, there's three main components in the VA. There's the Veterans Health Administration, the Veterans Benefits Administration, and the National Cemetery Administration. And of those three components that is VA now, we're the oldest. VHA was established in 1946. So we knew VA care long before that. In fact, VA medical care, the VA care in general, goes back to 1790. That's where the roots really started taking shape after the War Department created a small office to administer the pensions to veterans in the Revolutionary War. I mean, who knew that, right?
Right.
But truly, the predecessors for both the Health Administration and really the Cemetery Administration, they rose out of the acute need for veteran care created in the wake of the Civil War. So the Civil War ended in 1865. And that's really where President Abraham Lincoln, you can see his quote when you walk into our flag atrium, he really had the authority to purchase the land and start taking care of his Union soldiers.
And, you know, obviously we weren't around then.
No.
But, you know, you describe this small little office to administer pensions to what we have now. Those are some pretty, or that is a pretty significant change in the responsibility that this system has to care for those who raise their right hand to protect and defend.
And I had to do a little reading because I can't remember everything. So as I was kind of reading through it last night, it's really interesting that the care, both in the health care and the benefits, and of course the cemetery administration, it grew and changed with each conflict that we were part of. I just found it, I mean, suppose it was, it's obvious, right? But after World War I, that's when a huge population of disabled veterans were here. And so we started building the hospitals. After World War II, construction just really started sweeping through our nation. And by 1921, it became the medical, access to medical care. It just drove construction at heights across the nation. So 1921, boy, those construction workers were going nuts. And that is when we actually started here in Minneapolis, was 1921. That's when the U.S. Veterans Bureau leased land from Osbury Hospital in Minnesota and Aberdeen Hotel in St. Paul to put together a hospital to house our World War I veterans here in Minnesota.
And just in the short time that I've been around and familiar with the Minneapolis VA, it has changed drastically. You know, my first time walking in the door at the Minneapolis VA was back in 1991. And, you know, that's back when Jana was raising her hand to swear in or something like that,
or
I think.
Something like that.
But so, you know, the changes and the expansion of the healthcare, and you know, I teased it out with the director, Melanie, that, you know, we're going to be doing a special recording for the women's clinic with the big ribbon cutting. And, I mean, this is just another another thing to show, you know, that, you know what, our government, our federal government, our VA really wants to serve veterans where they're at.
Right, Doug. And I'm so glad you said the women's clinic. So in 1980 is really when the eligibility of women really was evident in medical care for veterans. And VA established an office to address women's health. And we've had a women's clinic in our Minneapolis VA back in a hallway called 2J. But yeah, we're cutting ribbon on a brand new clinic where everything for our women will be all in one space. And what's crazy is it's not the first ribbon cutting we've had this year.
Right.
I mean, I think this is like the fourth press release I've written about a ribbon cutting. We're just Minneapolis. We're expanding to the needs of the veterans that that they have in the moment, and finding ways to take care of them the very best way that we know how.
For those that are listening, are women veterans, and maybe they're hearing this for the first time. So just orientate them, us, to the campus. When you come in the main drive with the main hospital right in front of you, where is that clinic for the women now going to be located so that they know where to go?
Yeah, it's a little confusing, isn't it? I wish it was like straight north, straight south, but it's kind of like the southeast corner of our campus there where the main hospital is. When you're in the roundabout in front of the hospital, you're going to kind of go around like you're going to the left, kind of on the south side. And a few years back, we built a specialty clinic.
Yeah.
And so the women's clinic is tucked in between the specialty clinic and our spinal cord injury and disorder clinic on that south side. And the entrance, truly, you walk in from outside.
Yeah.
Which is something that was really, really important to the women veterans when this first they first really started talking about this.
So those who aren't comfortable with or understand the compass directions, it's to the left of the main building as you drive in.
And you got it, Doug.
Yeah, there it is. Okay, so we're going to run out of time, but I want to make sure that you have the opportunity, because the summer's almost over, but you guys are still doing outreach, and there are things happening. And so I want you to get an opportunity to talk a little bit about how people can still connect with the Minneapolis VA and the services and, you know, find out more.
We've got an outreach team. Some of our biggest outreach groups, I guess you'd call them, are our suicide prevention team. Boy, they're everywhere, those guys. We have also a unit called the Post 9/11. They attend all of the Yellow Ribbon events when the troops come back, not only the National Guard troops, but also reserve troops as well. We're looking forward to Military Appreciation Day at the State Fair.
I'll be there. Yeah. I'll be seeing you.
Yeah, you'll be recording out there. And so that's a really great time. And the reason why outreach is important, Doug, I think we've got a couple of dozen yet this summer that we're going to outreach events that we're going to be tackling within our whole catchment area, which is from Ely down to Rochester and all the way over to like Rice Lake, Wisconsin, right? It's to get out in front of those veterans who haven't checked to see if they're eligible for care. They haven't connected with the veterans benefits. They haven't connected with their CVSO. And so we want to be out there to tell people, take a second, check and see what benefits your service you've earned.
And you get to meet great people like Jana Nuremberg from the last segment. So, all right, Melanie, looking forward to it. And I'll be talking to you next week for our 850th show. Thank you all for joining us this week on Minnesota Military Radio. We always welcome your feedback and your guest suggestions. Please visit MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Click on Contact Us. You can also catch up on past episodes there or on your favorite podcast platform. I'd also like to thank everybody who continues to share the show. Be sure to tune in next week when a familiar voice returns to Minnesota Military Radio and we talk with the show's producers as we celebrate our 850th show. I'm Doug Wortham, your host on Minnesota Military Radio. Have a productive week, and please take a moment to thank and honor those who have served and those who continue to serve and sacrifice so we can all enjoy the liberty and freedom this great country has to offer.